Well, a very good evening to you out there and around the kingdom and wherever else you're listening to us as well. And thank you for tuning in to another Terrace Talk here on a very wet, windy night here in Tralee. We're coming to you live from the studio here in Tralee, of course. Donal Barry, I'll be with you until 8 o'clock this evening, and we look back at some of the action, I suppose, over the weekend. And what a busy weekend it was as well, with plenty of divisional battles down for decision, as well as, of course, those two very important provincial football finals featuring Listowel and Dingle. And a big congratulations to Listowel this evening, the latest junior club champions, after doing the business over Corkside Kilmurry on Saturday in Mallow. And of course, it was heartbreak for Dingle, who saw their fate, I suppose, ultimately decided by way of a penalty shootout in the worst weather conditions I've seen in a long time. And that was in Limerick yesterday. It just goes to show you the small margins of winning and losing really are marginal. Well, Andrew Moynihan will join us there shortly to chat about both of those finals, and we'll check in on John Evans's Kilmartra as well, see how they got on as well. A lot of Clarkland people are wondering that, but of course they know the answer to that already. Now, also on tonight's show, we catch up with what's happening in the East Kerry Championship, and we'll get reaction as well from that fantastic win from Ballydunahoe, who captured the Eamon O'Sullivan Cup when they defeated St Sennans yesterday. Of course, you might remember that we were previewing the final last week, and we said we'd bring one of them back, and of course, we hopefully, all going well, we'll have Robert Bunyan around 20 past 6 and get a bit more reaction there as well. Also on the show tonight, we'll be checking in with a bit of athletics. The European Cross Country Championships, of course, were held in Brussels at the weekend, yesterday even. And there was surprisingly a good Kerry feel to it as well, with Shane Brosnan helping the team secure a gold medal at the under-20s. But of course, there was also Tralee's Ushing Spillane, the first Kerry man home in the under-23 race. And of course, Niamh O'Sullivan, standing on the sidelines, I suppose, coaching the under-23 national women's. And hopefully, fingers crossed, we'll have all those on with us around 6:40 this evening. Then we'll take a quick check across over to East Kerry and catch up with Michael Healy. And then after 7, we're going to sit back and relax in the company of the Regional Sports Broadcaster of the Year. Who's that, people ask? Well, of course, it's Tim Moynihan, our own Tim Moynihan. Radio Kerry's Tim Moynihan, or is he Knocknagoshal's Tim Moynihan? He's an awful lot of Tim Moynihans, but we'll be looking back at the year that was in his company, and of course we'll talk about the number of, I suppose, prestigious awards that he won for his broadcasting. But do you know, we'll have an old chat, we'll talk about the beginnings maybe and the love of radio and all that, and of course we'll have to talk about a bit about Ambrose as well with him and the whole lot. So we'll have all that coming up in the second part of the show. But before we begin to this evening, news just kind of breaking as well, and I suppose it is unfortunate to report, I suppose, the loss of Billy McCarthy, of course, of Ardfert, and people will know, of course, Billy. I suppose you look at a Kerry hurling legend, I suppose, of the time back in 56 and 61. He was part of the All-Ireland Junior Hurling Championship team. He won Railway Cup medals as well with the Munster Hurlers in 57. I mean, how rare is that, to think that you were mixing with the best of the time, a Kerry hurler winning the Railway Cup medals. Of course, he played National League football with Kerry in 1959. Of course, that's the team that had Mick O'Connell, and it had Mick O'Dwyer, and it had Johnny Cullity and the whole lot. He played there in the full forward line, and he also played junior football with the Kerry Juniors as well. So this evening, before we start, we remember the late great William Bill McCarthy out there in Ardfert. So that's Andrew Moynihan joining us. Andrew, it's been a long season for you. You've been following the clubs. We're at provincial level now, two teams in the final. Let's start with Dingle first. I suppose in many ways people settled down yesterday to watch the game. First of all, before we get there, Limerick seemed to be kind of an unlikely venue for it. I was looking at a tweet yesterday that, you know, Castlehaven supporters had to travel 3.5 hours to get there. Dingle had to travel 2.5 hours to get there. And in fairness, 2,000 people is a commendable enough crowd. And I mean, watching the TV yesterday, they enjoyed the game despite the weather conditions, with both sides giving everything they had really to win that. Was Limerick kind of a surprise, or did it have to be neutral?
Yeah, I'd have to say I was a small bit surprised, Donald, with Limerick being announced as the venue. I suppose Killarney was okay with both teams. That's what both teams said. You even think about Austin Stack Park could have been a venue for the game. Thinking about just the distances that both teams had to travel for the game, it just seemed a bit of a crazy call. And I suppose even a longer trip back for the team that lost yesterday. And yeah, it was a difficult call. Just 1,800 in the gated grounds. But I suppose they made it seem like there was at least 5,000 in there with the atmosphere. Yeah. Was raucous.
There was a great atmosphere there, to be fair, of course, and I suppose two kind of real good football-y clubs as well. Look, ultimately heartbreak at it. If Dingle look back on this, Andrew, will they say they had a couple of chances to win it maybe in the actual game itself before it even went to penalties?
Yeah, I believe Dingle, at times you would have thought that this was the game had been won for them. They led by 3 points heading into the second half of extra time, and at that stage, with the way the game had gone, the circumstances of the game and the conditions, you thought they would have hung in there. But I suppose you'd have to compliment Castlehaven's patience and perseverance. It really got them over the line, and they were never faced by Dingle's leads in the game, and they plucked away at that scoreboard. And you'd have to mention Cathal Maguire. He was the extra time king for Castlehaven. Dingle up two, just 2 minutes to play in injury time. He scored 2 points with just one functioning leg at the time. His other leg had cramped up, so it was class to see.
Yeah, I suppose it was going to be one of those games, you know, where the weather conditions kind of decided, and whoever had the wind, I suppose, you know, they had to make the best of their advantage. But I thought Dingle played really impressively into the wind.
Yeah, they have to, and I suppose you'd have to compliment some Dingle players like Conor Flannery. His work rate for Dingle throughout the game was very impressive. He was a real driving force in their play in the first half even, and I suppose the conditions, as you said, they would have affected both teams. And
the weather was crazy. I mean, Gavin Corn yesterday, when he kicked a few kickouts and he tried to go along, I mean, the ball was coming backwards, such was the strength of the wind. I mean, possession was vital and was crucial, and it was, I you know, those games are difficult to play in, but to serve up an hour of exciting football in that condition alone, I mean, that in itself was fantastic.
Yeah, credit where credit's due to the two teams. They served up an excellent football match given the circumstances. And as you mentioned, Gavin Curran, his kickouts, they were coming back to him every so often. But yeah, that has to be commended in how both teams went at the game. And I suppose even if you're looking at the conditions and how they affected injury-wise, you had Michael Hurley and Conor Cahalan. They were subbed off due to injury, and Tom Sullivan, who went over on his ankle. A lot of players were down. They needed treatment in the first half. And I suppose fair play to all those players for soldiering on in just crazy conditions.
Absolutely, tough conditions. Of course, it went to extra time. Dingle again kind of pushed a small bit clear, and I suppose Castlehaven with 2 minutes to go got their 2 points. But then I suppose the drama, I mean, the penalties, we have loads of comments, and I will go through a good few of them in a couple of minutes. First of all, talking about the penalty shootout, and should it be allowed and shouldn't be allowed in the Munster final. You know, we'll discuss that in a minute, but the actual penalty shootout itself, I was sitting back watching them, and for the first couple of penalties I was saying, do you remember the time that people were saying that GAFLs couldn't take penalties? I mean, the first couple of penalties were top corner rockets, fantastic quality.
Yeah, when you were looking at the penalties from the outset yesterday, you'd say it would be no day for the fancy stuff, no day for the top corners, but both teams just went at it. There were some fantastic penalties from both sides. I mean, Damien Cahalan, the keeper, and obviously the back, he scored two brilliant penalties, saved one after going into goals for the shootout. And I suppose I mentioned also to Gavin Curran, who saved two pens, and he had a fine day in goals. And back to Cahalan, I suppose just when he thought Dingle had it, he saves Tom Sullivan's potential match winning penalty, and he was the Haven hero in the penalty shootout.
I suppose with a name like Cahalan from Castlehaven, it was always wrote in the stars. And of course they made the brave decision, I suppose, at the time, to take Darren Cahalan out of goal and put Damien in for the penalties. Look, overall, I mean, it's disappointing. It's an awful way to lose a game. Is there any solace in the fact that Dingle players will go home knowing we lost it on penalties, or, you know, a loss is a loss and they all hurt?
Yeah, it is hard kind of not to feel bad for Dingle in that way. They were never trailing in the game or even in extra time, and they might feel that this yesterday was a game that they left behind them, considering their 3 point advantage heading into the second half of extra time. So of course I would still consider them the strongest team in Kerry in the club, but I suppose those opportunities in Munster, they only come around every so often, and they'll probably feel terrible after yesterday and how they left that behind.
Well, look, I suppose they'll bounce back. They were great Kerry champions, and they still are great Kerry champions, to be fair to them. And they flew the Kerry flag as bravely and as high as they could yesterday, and I don't think there's one person in the kingdom that doubts the amount of effort they put in and the amount of time. And all we spoke to Sean Sullivan last week as well about the amount of time and effort and the people that were coming over to support support them. They didn't get over the line, but it wasn't from the want of trying. And I suppose going out, as I said, on penalties, it's exceptionally harsh way to do it. There was other winners, of course, at the weekend. Listowel, fantastic win. Might not mean the most fantastic game of football, but I mean, it won't matter to Listowel. They're home with a Munster Cup.
Yeah, Listowel have brought back Munster Junior Silver to the Kingdom for a 19th time, and they're the 17th Kerry team to win the Munster Junior Club Championship.
Isn't that an amazing stat? The 17th Kerry team to win a Munster Junior Championship.
The only team to have won it twice is Fanoog, and yeah, I suppose it shows Kerry's dominance in that regard, but it is an amazing stat when you look at it that way. And even for Kilmurry, it's disappointing for them. They've lost two finals in a row, Fossa last year and now Listowel, but Listowel were just that bit too strong for the Kerry side.
Yeah, interesting you mentioned about last year's against Fossa. They seemed to put up more of a gallop against Fossa last year, even though they had the Cliffords and the high scoring power. They put up a big score. They seemed content this year to kind of maybe, I don't know, park the bus, maybe borrow that soccer phrase. And it was a very poor first half, especially if you were watching it.
Yeah, it's strange how they set up this year, considering who they were playing last year with the Cliffords. You would have thought it would have been the other way around, but they set up very defensively, I suppose, in a way not to concede a goal in 17 points like last year. And their overall play, it kind of just lacked any sort of drive to take the game to Listowel. It wasn't a great showing, and they'll admit that themselves. It took till the second half to register their first score, and I suppose to have no score in the first half in the Munster final, it's not a great stat.
No, not at all. Listowel had four, of course, one from play, but Listowel pushed on handy enough in the second half. I mean, to be fair, they probably should have won by a lot more, maybe.
Yeah, I suppose the scoreline probably flattered Kilmurry in the end, the late fisted goal by Greg Barrett, but it was a dominant Listowel display. You look at Jojo Grimes, he was brilliant for MS on the day. He controlled that middle, and he was kind of involved in all aspects of Listowel's play, the highlight being a perfectly pinned pass outside the boot to Sean Keane in the second half. They increased their lead to 6 points, and as you said, they probably should have won by more, but they're Munster champions, and they'll be happy with how yesterday turned out.
Absolutely. They'll have a break over Christmas now, and they'll be back out in action in early January. How different would it have been if Fires beat them?
That would completely different circumstances. Yeah, I suppose.
I mean, they only got out of the group by the skin of their teeth, to be fair.
That's it. I suppose I'd argue that they faced their toughest challenges in Kerry in the group matches. I was down there in Park Game, and when they beat Fieries by a point that day, that was an unreal match, and that stuck to them. And of course,
but to put it in context, they were in a group where three teams finished on 4 points.
That's it. And
the scoring difference kind of over the group, and the rest is history, and they turned over Ballymac. It was a fantastic game, and you know, I suppose they weren't probably at their best, but then again, the weather conditions in Mallow were pretty horrendous, to be fair. Not as bad as Limerick, maybe, but it's a hard old place to play with the wind as well. They are Munster champions now, one step more with a win, and they're into the All-Ireland and all that goes with it. Donal, the quality of some of the penalties were top notch and goes against the thought that GAA players can score penalties. Yeah, absolutely, listener. You can contact us on 083 300 300, or call 066 712 3666. The next one came in on the line. Donal, I was in Limerick yesterday. It took almost 3 hours to get there. It was miserable and an unsafe trip home in the weather. Should the GAA allow games in such weather conditions? Yeah, there was a bit of debate about that. Yellow warnings and heading into red warnings and the whole lot. And it certainly, as I said, it's a long way back down to West Kerry from Limerick in those conditions. Why did Munster GAA need to bring teams so far away from their clubs to play a final? Surely Killarney would have been halfway, or even Mallow, says this listener. Donal, why did the game need to go to penalties? Surely another day out is the least both teams deserve. There's a lot of train of thought on that, Andrew. Give him another game. Penalties are there now since
2020.
So they're not something that just happened overnight in that sense. I mean, this is the third season. Teams will have known that in the case of a draw, in the case of extra time, winner on the day, the whole lot, they would have known that. They would have set up for it, and they would have known it. And maybe they would have been taking a few penalties back in West Kerry or down in Castlehaven or something, maybe in preparation for it as well. Is it a way to end a Munster final, though?
I suppose, like, if you look at it from yesterday, I think every neutral would have loved to see both teams battle it out again next weekend. It could have been accommodated as well. I suppose in some cases penalties is the way to go. Demanding schedules in intercounty season and some club championships, you need penalties to finish off games, but personally, in yesterday's circumstances, I would have loved to see another game. I thought it was fantastic from start to finish. And the Dingle manager, Padraig Corcoran, he described it, it's just a cruel way to lose. And it may seem sour grapes, but it's very difficult to disagree with him in how yesterday turned out.
Yeah, I don't think it's sour grapes, to be fair. I mean, it could have went the other way as well, and equally you would look across at Castlehaven and say, look, they gave it their all for 80 minutes, and cruel is probably a very fair word to describe it. Donal, the GA really need to look at itself deciding a game of so much importance on penalties. Yeah, absolutely. Donal, I was in Mallow, a guy talking about the Listowel game. Was delighted to see Listowel win. They were the better team by a mile. Really disappointed the way Kilmore set up and failed to score a point in the first half. It's a damning stat, and the way football has gone. Indeed, there was only 1 point from play scored in the first half. Yeah, Listowel led 4-3. I think the other ones were place balls. Maybe there was a mark there as well. It sounds mad, doesn't it? 1 point from play in a Munster final.
Yeah, it's a damning stat, as he said. And I suppose it's just kind of a sign of the times at the minute. Some people say it's the end of football as we know it. But look, football does, there is still good football out there. And I just think Kilmurry, the way they set up at the weekend, it's just not the way to go in the Munster final. Especially, they have good players. We saw that last year. They put up a good fight against Fossa. And I think even if you're looking at other games across the weekend, Scotstown and Glen, that was a great game. Even yesterday's game, in the circumstances, both fantastic games. And that's kind of what you'd have to say about 1 point.
And at the end of the day, it'll go down the history books that Castlehaven won it 4-3 in the penalty. They won't even worry about how many points were scored. Yeah, absolutely, congratulations to Castlehaven this evening, and absolutely well done to Dingle as well for pushing it all the way. Yes, they will be hurting tonight, sure. Everybody that's involved in football will understand that, but they will rise again. And they are a fantastic team, as I said. They've done the best they could, and they could do no more, and that's all anybody will ask a team. And congratulations to Listowel as well, and congratulations to John Evans. He delivered again.
He's done it again. Kilmacher defeated Mungrits, St. Paul's of Limerick, 3-12 to 10 points. Dan O'Donnell was the star player with 2-2. I suppose John Evans, the Clarkland native, we all know of his great success with Long Rangers in 1996, winning the All-Ireland Senior Championship. And he is a deep CV, managing Tip, the Rossies and Meath. And this just adds to his resume of great success.
Fair play. I suppose the pressure was on him after beating Milltown Castlemaine. He had to deliver a Munster final. Come here, Andrew. Thanks very much. Thanks for this evening. Thanks for keeping us on track with all the club championship action throughout the year and the season. Of course, believe it or not, it swings around again for next year. And hopefully the granny was listening tonight, was she?
We'll have to make sure of that now.
Absolutely, yeah. Granny was putting a hat on you there when I collected you earlier. We'll take a quick commercial break.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
Now, hi Donal, I was watching the game on TV yesterday, and I think it's a shame that football was played yesterday. It should be a close season from the 1st of November to the 1st of February. Shame on the GAA. Players need a break. And that's from Patrick. Well, good God, if it was close from the 1st of November to the 1st of February, there'll be some squeezing the rest of the year. But yeah, absolutely, do need a break, Patrick. Point taken. Lads, penalties don't belong in football. End of story. It's these type of things that are ruining football. The mark is another ridiculous rule brought in. Yeah, absolutely. Plenty thought for that out there as well. Hi Donal, very hard look on Dingle losing on penalties. It was a Munster final. Surely they could have had time for a replay before Christmas. I don't know how they played at all. The pitch looked very wet at the stand side of the pitch, and that's Charles in North Kerry there. Listowel caller says he thinks the Dingle management made the wrong decisions late on the game when they should have closed it out, and thought they should have brought on some young legs in the heavy pitch. And then finally, big congrats to Jerry McCarthy, who won a Munster title with Listowel Emmets on Saturday. He won a county championship with Field Rangers in 2007. Wow, beating South Kerry, how that still hurts anyway. That's a Munster winner some 16 years later. Well, listen, congratulations, Jerry McCarthy. And I suppose congratulations as well to Field Rangers back there in 2007. I still remember Ian Fitzmaurice coming up to kick a 45 from the middle of nowhere to put it over the bar to win that game. Real North Kerry Championship football played that day. And of course, it was North Championship football played as well yesterday when Ballydunahoe got the better of St. Sennans 2-6 to 1-6 to win their first Eamon O'Sullivan, of course, since 2017. All the correct shorts and everything were worn on the day, I'm nearly sure. Robert Bunyan, are you still celebrating that?
We are indeed, Donal. We had a long night last night, and we're going to have an even longer night tonight, I'm told. And maybe the Listowel boys, our near neighbours, when I look out the window here, I can see the lights of the Listowel. I think they might be coming out to join us with their cup, and congrats to them too. So we don't. We have been in the last and the last 10 years, we've been in 5 finals. But then there was 30 years or 20 years gaps before that. So we're going to make the best of it, Donal.
Mm-hmm. And of course, the last couple of finals didn't end your own way either. I mean, you dropped short in those finals. So I mean, winning yesterday kind of puts all that to a side as well.
Yeah, St. Cillan's beat us and 2-19. Desmond's beat us in 2-20. And by the way, Donald, didn't we win the junior premier in 2020? But because of COVID, there was no Munster championship.
Oh, that's right.
Period, so we were lucky to win the North Kerry championship yesterday, but we were so unlucky in 20. I don't know whether how far we'd have got, but when I heard you saying there a while ago, Andrew, that 15 or 17 Kerry clubs have won that. Maybe we could have won that, but look, we're after winning the North Kerry championship. We can't be greedy, won it in terrific fashion, because two teams served up a game. You couldn't call it free-flowing football, but the fitness levels were something else in Ballyduff yesterday with the wind. And to give you an idea of the wind, I suppose it was the same in Limerick. I didn't see the game in Limerick now, but it was on the same time. And the goalkeepers kicking out the ball, on a few occasions the referee had to tell him to wave with the tee and kick it out off the ground, and even at that the ball would roll away. So they served up a terrific game in those conditions, and Ballydunham would just got out on top in the second half against the wind.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned those conditions, Robert, because most district championships are kind of played at that type of the year, where at least every second one is kind of in those kind of horrendous conditions. Does that bring out a different sort of character in a player, or a different sort of determination, or maybe it's even a great leveler for both teams, that all of a sudden, you know, you don't have the guy that can get away as quick, or you don't have the fella that can sold up the field 100 miles an hour. So in many ways it becomes a right battle, and in many ways, because the scoreline is so tight, every score is crucial.
Well, this time of the year, the pitches are excellent. It was just a wee hit, a real horrific day yesterday. The wind is so strong, and the rain, and it certainly evens up the play a little bit more. But then again, the pitches are so good, and we played Beale a fortnight ago, and it was a beautiful day. It might be cold, but it was a beautiful sunny day, so you can hit good days this time of the year too. But the North Kerry Championship, and maybe other district board championships as well, are so hard to win, because they are played this time of the year, and it probably does, you're right, even up the play a little bit more. That said, Jason Foley, when he took off yesterday against the Gale Force wind, went about 60 or 70 yards with the ball, laid it off to Jack Kennelly, and that's why we are the North Kerry champion. So I suppose class comes out in all conditions.
Yeah, absolutely. Is there any truth in the rumour that you nearly pulled the cup apart after? The handle came off with it, did it?
Yeah. Well, I saw something silver flying in the air. I wasn't too sure what it was, but when I saw the cup last night, we didn't have it long when we broke the handle off it, so I suppose we'll have to fix it.
Yeah, I think when it was raised, to be fair, yeah, we'll have to talk to Marito Sullivan about getting super glue or something maybe, but when the handle came off, I think it was Jason Foley caught it anyway. So I mean, he certainly is a good fullback, good for running up the field and catching broken handles as well. Come here, Robert, seriously, you can rest well over the winter now, knowing that Bally Donoghue are the kings of North Kerry, a 16 team North Kerry. You've seen it all before. You've beaten the club down the road as well as Cillan's. It's a great feeling, isn't it?
It is, and as I said to you last week, winning galvanises the club. It will be far easier to get officers, to get volunteers, to get sell lottery tickets, to do a little bit of fundraising when you win. Everyone is in good form, and it was a game that was won without rancour. In other words, there was no no foul strokes or anything. It was a tough, hard game, but a fair game, and everybody, the Cillan's obviously didn't go home happy, but at least they took part in horrific conditions and played their heart out. So Ballydunham will be galvanised by winning, and it will make things easier done. There's no doubt about it. It doesn't make it totally easy, but it makes things easier when you win, and to conventions and AGMs and all those things go off far more smoothly.
Is there no trip to New York for the boys? No? Is that pushing it?
Maybe we get a big sponsor. Maybe somebody in Listowel, that big town there beside us, with all their wealthy people. maybe they'll go and we'll go with them.
Absolutely. That's what you should do. You should wait for Listowel to win the All-Ireland and you can travel away with them then, maybe. Listen, Robert, thanks very much. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. But before I go, congrats to Listowel, our next-door neighbours. Well done to Barry Duff on the organisation of it. Have looked at Dingle. We have a lot of contacts with Dingle. They were unfortunate there yesterday. And as well as that, Teddy Keane, who was PRO of the North Kerry Board for a number of years, a referee the 1986 final, a player with my van, an absolute gentleman, passed away there towards the weekend, and his funeral will be this week. So our sympathies from Barry Duff and all GA folk to the Keane family of my van.
Absolutely. Fine words, Robert. Fair play to you. You have a big target on your back next year. And sure, who knows, you might draw Sinnins in the first round, or you might even draw your neighbours Listowel. You're talking so fondly of them, you'll be fighting them next year. But listen, congratulations and well done to St. Sinnins as well. Fantastic to get to the final. And congratulations, of course, to Mairead and all those running the North Kerry Championship, and every district championship as well. And of course, next week it's the turn of Mid Kerry, Keele versus Lone Rangers. And we also have the East Kerry one coming up as well. So there's plenty of district football coming up. But after break, we'll talk athletics.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
Now, the Spar European Cross Country Championships, of course, took place in Brussels yesterday as well, but the amount of football was on the telly and the whole lot, we might have forgot that. But you might have seen on the news that their under-20s men took a gold medal in the team event. Nick Greggs, of course, a superb bronze medal for him in that race. But the Kerry flag, of course, flew high and mighty, as was by Shane Brosnan. He helped them to secure the gold medal as well in the team event. And, of course, there was a couple of more Kerry faces in Brussels as well. Oisin Spillane from Tralee, who runs in the colours of Ennis, the first man home in the under-23s, or the first Irishman home in the under-23s, and our very own, of course, Niamh O'Sullivan. She was coach of the women's under-23, and delighted to say that we've managed to gather as many of them together as possible in a massive hurry completely. But first of all, I'm going to say congratulations to Shane Brosnan. First of all, delighted that you can join us, Shane. Is the feeling good? Is the feeling great coming home with a gold medal?
Hi, thanks so much for having me. The feeling's amazing. It was an incredible experience. It was a great race. There was a great community out there, fans and even just the team itself. It's great to come back and be able to see that everyone's proud of us. Know that we went out there and we gave it our all and we came back successful.
Absolutely. And of course, they're none proud of you, Shane, then at home in Castle Island, which is home, of course. You came a superb 28th place, of course, and I mean, the conditions, I might talk about muddy conditions. They look pretty horrendous to run in. Was it difficult to compete in the muddy conditions?
Yeah, I found it extremely difficult. I haven't had much experience running in any type of mud, let alone some of the worst mud I've seen. So it was definitely a different technique, a different style that I'm used to. So I wasn't fully prepared for that. Going into the race, I knew from checking out the course the day before, I knew it was going to be tough. I was just trying to gather some help from everyone else how to navigate it. But at the end of the day, it's a bunch of mud. It's going to hurt, but you got to get through it.
Absolutely. And of course, you ran close enough to Seamus Robinson, your other teammate. He kind of pipped you there close to the line, maybe 26, 28. Were you running together for a fair bit, or were you keeping him in your sights, or were you ahead of him for a bit, maybe?
Yeah, I was ahead of him for a little bit, and I think going into the last lap, I think he went by me, and I tried to stick with him as long as I could, but I would stick with him on the grass, then we'd hit the mud, and I'd slow down a little bit more than everyone else around me. I was trying to stay there, and it was, the two of us running together, we had all the Irish fans out there cheering for us. It was great. Like, no matter where we were, there were cheers for Shane, there were cheers for Seamus. They were all out there, but he didn't get me at the end of the day. He had a good run. Kudos to him.
Absolutely. And of course, the Castle Island connection is hugely strong, of course. I know your grandfather was years. He's had me running around the Gold Mile every Christmas. You'd be afraid to say no to Dennis. But maybe for people that don't understand or know, explain your Castle Island heritage and where you are at the moment.
So my granddad is Dennis Brosnan. He is going back to that Gold Mile. We're going to have the whole family out together for Christmas, but he's going to make sure he ditches us early to get that mile done. He helped found Henri Epps, and he's currently the president. All my aunts and uncles grew up in Castle Island. They all competed for Henri Epps. And, you know, it's great to be able to go back, run for the same club. Pretty weird putting on the same uniforms. Well, not the same uniforms, but to wear the same name that my dad wore 20, 30, 40 years ago. So it's pretty good to kind of keep that alive.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And, of course, you're studying applied maths and economics at Harvard. I mean, that sounds incredibly draining. Is the running a help, or do you thoroughly enjoy the world of economics?
I wouldn't say I enjoy it. I would say I don't mind it as much as I do some of the other subjects. But, you know, it is a little difficult, but it's kind of what I signed up for, and, you know, it's going good so far. So
fair
I'm actually in the middle of studying for some finals. I'm heading back to the States tomorrow for the finals.
So you can study. You can,
go well.
You can do a bit of applied maths on the plane over, maybe. Come here. Not that long ago, I mean, your grandfather was on to me. Very proud man. The Wanamaker Mile. You ran that. Did you run it around Eamon Coughlin's time or something like that?
I competed in the Millrose Games. I was in the high school version of the Wanamaker Mile, but Eamon Coughlin was there. I've met him at that meet a couple times. You know, he's a great personality. He's very successful. You know, he's always there. He's owned that race, and now he's kind of there congratulating the current winners.
Fair play. It's a nice way. Now, you mightn't be great at running in the mud, or maybe you're getting better at running, but I imagine Oisín Spillane there, you've ran in the mud plenty times.
Yeah, I think the Nationals down in Gorin there a few weeks ago were a great practice for yesterday, and yeah, definitely throughout the years I've been running Irish cross country, you get pretty familiar with the mud. So yeah, when we kind of went for the shakeout on it on Saturday, I was like this is my kind of course, and I think it played to the Irish strength overall. So yeah, it was a great day.
Mm-hmm. How did your race go? I mean, obviously you're the first Irish athlete home, I mean, which is fantastic, of course, bringing international championships with you as well. Did it pan out the way you wanted it to pan out, Oisín, or is there always a little bit of it could have been better maybe, or God knows it could have been even worse?
Yeah, I think overall I was happy enough to come in just inside the top 30. Like, it went off, I knew it was going to go off pretty quick, which it's gone down to 7k instead of 8k for the under 23s now, and like, we're used to racing 9 and 10k at senior level and cross country as well, so I knew, like, with it being a bit shorter, the guy's going to go off very hard. So I just kind of tried to get in a decent position after, you know, for the first turn, and it was getting pretty physical around the corners and in the mud for the first lap or so, and then, you know, it kind of starts to calm down, and I started moving through a little bit. And yeah, definitely made up some places, which was kind of the plan. And then coming to kind of two laps to go around the course, I saw Dean not too far ahead of me, and I was like, I could tell I was just catching him slowly, and to just pass him then, going into the last lap, and he came by me again, just managed to piff him on the line. It was like a training session down Lees Road in Ennis. So yeah, no, I was happy enough overall, I think.
Yeah,
maybe when I came back to Dean, I thought we'd be a bit higher up, but you know, to be inside the top 25-30 is still pretty good.
Oh, that's huge. I mean, it's the European Championships after all. It's not racing down either. Maybe explain the Ennis connection maybe just briefly, because obviously people say, oh, don't sure he's from Ennis, but he's not, obviously. He's from Tralee out the road here, isn't he?
Yeah, from Tralee, and I'm in fourth year in UL now, and been coached by Roy Chester, who's from Ennis, and been training with the lads since I kind of came into first year, and especially since second year, been training with the lads a lot. And yeah, I was running with the Tralee Harriers until August or last summer, and just kind of said, like, when the transfer window opened up, I was like, you know, like, we don't really have a team or anything too much going on with the club in Tralee, and I'm always up in Limerick anyway, which is, you know, half an hour spin out Ennis. So that we'd have a team there for, like, beating the likes of National League, and we finished fifth in the seniors there a few weeks ago as well, fifth men's team. So yeah, to just join something like that, and obviously Rory's been coaching me as well, so yeah, just kind of made sense to transfer.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a strong course. Is Niall Murphy on your team, but he's obviously running with Shane on the other side as well. Explain the 9 to 10 kilometres and then cutting down to 7. How do you prepare for that? I mean, you, as you said, you obviously know they're going to start at a massive clip, and you have to kind of either go with them. Do you always have to go with them? Or, I mean, if you don't go with them, I mean, the race is over fairly quickly, is it?
Yeah, I think if you're looking to be in the mix of like maybe a top 5 race, you probably want to commit and go with it. But you know, if you're looking to maybe score on the team and come through, especially over 10k, you know, you can definitely work through like the last couple of k, from lads going off too fast, you can pick some people off. But yeah, so like at the Nationals they run us the under 23 with the seniors, and it's kind of a subcategory, so we were running 9k down Kilkenny there a few weeks ago, and then at the Europeans, the under-23s is its own thing, so it's down to 7k then, so you know it's going to be a bit quicker, and like you've got some lads with good track times as well. So yeah, it's great day out like with everyone, you know, 800 metre runners up to 10k, even yeah, probably some half marathons, and they're like, you got everything. So it's a great experience.
It's a big mix of disciplines, of course, all thrown in together, and I suppose at different stages, some of the faster fellas can run quicker on grass, and then I suppose some of the fellas struggle away through the mud. It seems like a coaching problem, really. Niamh O'Sullivan, thanks for joining us as well this evening. You were, of course, the under 23 national women's coach. Did you have big coaching difficulties on the day?
Hi Donald, thanks for having me on again. No, it was an absolutely brilliant weekend, and the two lads, they were absolutely two heroes on the day. It was extremely tough conditions for all, and like Ocean's making reference to, they changed the distances this year. So in the Europeans, junior girls would all have run 4, and under 23s would have run 6, and the seniors would have run 8, and the lads would have run, you know, 6, 8, 10. And what they did is they put equal distances for male and female, so the juniors were all running 5, the under 23 7, and the ladies 9. So it was a big jump up, really. And between the jump up in distance and the type of course that it was, it did make it quite difficult. And Shane is saying there, if anybody hadn't been used to those conditions, and he did so well in it, I think he's doing himself a disservice there. I think he did really, really well. Everybody struggled in it, and I thought he did particularly well. Ushing was flying absolutely over it. They did have hurdles there on the finishing straight, and because of health and safety, because it was so bad the day before, they actually took them out. I think the one unfortunate thing was they actually had an open cross-country meet, and you could actually enter that up to the day before. So they had, on the evening of the day before, they actually had open races on it, so put an awful lot of traffic over the course. And it obviously rained all day then in the afternoon. We were out there in the morning, and it was mucky, but it wasn't that bad. But it was a hugely deteriorated course when we went out there yesterday, and you could see that, I think, on TV very much. But the bends particularly made it extremely tough. And just for TV, I think they've changed, the whole routing as well, to the longest lap you'll get for any of the races is 1500 metre lap, which means that you've a lot of loops, especially over 9k. And with the slippery bends, people like Fionnuala McCormack absolutely thrived at it, but there were other people that didn't, and you really saw them at Mudlarks yesterday. But going up with the distance and the conditions together, it really favoured those who, as you were saying, were used to running on grass, and I suppose the longer distances as well. And I think some of the younger age groups definitely struggled with that.
And of course, I suppose, like every kind of race that you go into, Niamh, I mean, it's about getting results in a sense, but it's also about building up the experience and moving on to the next one and moving on to the next one. And I suppose in many ways, even for Shane and Oisín, I mean, it's about experiencing as many experiences as they can, because, you know, when the big days come, and they will come down the track for both of them because they're exceptionally talented, that they will have the experience of handling a course like this if they come across it again, and they will know it. And so it's all a learning curve as well.
Absolutely. And you know, dead on in that, I suppose, before we went to the World Championships and we went to the Europeans every year, and we were never competitive with the world. I mean, if you got the top 80 or 90, you were doing well. That would be equated to a good run. So what Athletics Ireland did a very good job on us. They say, right, we're going to concentrate in European athletics, so we're going to put 6 teams out, male and female, junior, under 23 and senior, 36 athletes, and we're going to fill teams, and we're going to concentrate in Europeans and be competitive. And they've done that now for the last good few years, and it's really, really worked well. So what's lovely there for, I suppose, Shane and Oisin is that that transition from juniors to under-23s and seniors. I love working with the under-23s. I've been with them the last few years. And I find that they're the few years where you lose people to the sport. It's a tough grind, and like the two lads have exams coming up. Oisin has an exam tomorrow, and Shane has come back, as he said, to exams. And it's quite a hard time of the year. It's a hard sport. It's, you know, it's great to have teams out there, and it gives them that chance on teams like that to really work on that team spirit. And I was looking out for Shane because obviously he'd come back. I didn't know, he knew the lads to see. He didn't know some of them, and was wondering, you know, would he be okay? Would he fit in? I had no worries after the first few hours. He was absolutely stuck in the middle of them. And he was rooming with Nick Griggs, and he just absolutely just melded in so well. And Oisin then has just been in that team, knows all the gang, and had a fabulous run there in the internationals recently. But as you say, it's getting that team spirit. And we really do work on that and the transition from junior, particularly under 23. And I suppose we need to work, if we go back and look at the results, fabulous in the juniors and, you know, good on the seniors. And we just have, it depends really who's in that age group at that particular year. But it is that age group, I think, is the kernel of really getting them into competitive seniors.
Mm-hmm. And it's a unique event because everybody thinks athletics is an individual sport. It's just me and my own and my water bottle maybe or whatever it is. But this aspect of it, the team event aspect of it, particularly in cross country, where coming 25th and coming 24th might make the difference becoming 5th and 3rd or whatever, and it does kind of encourage people to kind of every place counts and every placing counts, I suppose, in that instance. Is that the aspect that builds up the team spirit even more than having maybe an individual winner as such?
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, all the athletes there yesterday on the line, you know, you die on the line for your club mates, your teammates, and every single one of them ran their legs off yesterday. Really, every single one of them. Some were happy with their run, some of them were quite as happy as, you know, because of conditions, really. But everybody, and even if you found it tough, and there was nobody out there who didn't find it tough yesterday. And I mean, it was like 36 heroes out there because it was so, so tough. But you will, and that team aspect, and it is a very individual sport. There's no doubt about that. And I suppose cross country in athletics is one of the things where we all really can enjoy that club team. You know, you're running for a club team, you're running for a county team, you're running for a national team. And for the others yesterday, you know, kind of your national team being out there representing and being with your five more in your team, you will give everything on the day. And they all did a marvellous job on that.
Mm-hmm. Shane Brosnan, are you looking forward to Christmas?
Yeah, very excited. I headed back to the States to take some exams, and then I'm coming back to Castle Islands, and we're going to spend Christmas with the whole family. It's going to be a big reunion, so I'm looking forward to it.
God, you'll be a celebrity now. You might be leading the St. Patrick's Day parade or something out there, a gold medalist. Shane, speak to us about, I suppose we'll talk about it from maybe the American side looking over the sea at Castle Island. The Kerry-ness part of it, the green and gold, I presume you're more than aware of that Kerry factor in Castle Island, the whole lot. How is that built into your life?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's a huge part of it. It's where my dad's from, where all of our family's from. It's where we grew up over the summers when we come back for the holidays like Christmas. So, you know, we spent a lot of time there. And even though I am, like, living out of the U.S., it is still, like, a big part of my identity and just having all those ties there. And so, like, you know, we have the flags up. I have the uniform, the Henriac uniform hung up in my room. You know, always getting the updates from my granddad about everything. Even as little as, like, when my cousins are going to do their tidy towns. So it's, and I think it's very important. It's very special.
Absolutely. You won't lose sight of it from the Castle Island perspective. Oisin Spillane, what's next on the agenda? Have you a couple of weeks downtime, or are you kind of still in the middle of a season?
Yeah, should take a few days off now. I think I have a couple of exams this week, and, you know, just be tired from the travel and race and everything yesterday and today. So get the exams over with, and just kind of build back then over Christmas. I might do an old road race or two around the place to kind of fill the time, and then heading off to Kenya with a few lads from Ennis and UL on training camp there on New Year's Eve for most of the month of January since we're off college. So get into some indoor racing and just build for the outdoors next year then, really, yeah, so.
Yeah. How much, Oisin, does the whole travelling to venue and back again take on you? Because obviously, I mean, cross-country running, it takes a lot out of you. Does it take a while for the body to rebound back?
Yeah, I suppose we'll find out tomorrow. I'm trying to wake up damn at night. But yeah, definitely, I think it was good to go out there on the Thursday evening, I think, for the race on Sunday, because you kind of got those few days and kind of settle, and you know you never really get used to a hotel, or you might not sleep as well or whatever, but it was nice to get out there early, and you know, you're not worrying about getting in late on a Friday and having to be up to get to the course on Saturday then. And we're out of the hotel early this morning for the flight, so yeah, definitely a bit tired up after the whole thing, but no, it was a great experience.
Mm-hmm. Were all the Tralee gang on to yesterday's WhatsApps and everything, or?
Yeah, there's lots of messages coming in and WhatsApp and Instagram and everything. So, yeah, it was great to have my parents over there as well, and two of my aunties came to watch as well. So, and a good contingent from Ennis and just Irish, like, in general, it was crazy, like, running in. Never experienced anything like a run around the course, like, every inch of the barriers for the spectators was just wedged, like, in your ear, and, you know, people shouting for you the whole time. So, the fans were definitely immense yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Niamh, before we finish up, a word on Nick Griggs. Obviously, he's bronze medal. I mean, absolutely fantastic. He's been around maybe a small bit as well, even though he's still under 23. He could be he certainly is somebody to look forward to in the way. Maybe explain to the listeners who he is and how promising can he be.
Nick is extremely promising, and I mean, you know, he wouldn't usually be looking for conditions like that. And the only thing about it was that a few weeks back we had the trial for yesterday in Gorn and Kilkenny, and the conditions were awful, not quite as bad as yesterday, but they weren't far off. And Nick fell on the race and went over his ankle and had to pull out of the race and was quite upset about it. And rightfully and thankfully, Athletics Ireland picked him on the team, even though obviously he didn't finish. And it just showed, like, it was a really, really good call that he did yesterday. He's coached by Mark Kirk, brilliant guy, one of the best coaches in the country, and he's amazing speed. Like, he's done so well on the track, indoors, outdoors, and that really, it is, he wouldn't really be looking, I suppose, as much across country as what we'd be looking for speed. So I think we'll be seeing a lot of Nick on the track, you know, obviously big championships coming up now over the next few years. But he's a huge speed merchant, and I think that's where Mark wants him to go, really. So it was great to have him in there, the cross country. And I mean, like, that team there, like, with, say, with Shane, last them would move up, you know, from junior to under 23. Thing is, that makes it really, really hard to make these teams, which is fantastic, because you've just got such strength and depth there. But Nick is there for the last few years, and he has European medals and that as well, and I think he's going to go forward with his, as I say, he's an excellent coach, but his mindset is just unbelievable. He's totally, totally focused. One of the nicest guys you could meet, as I'm sure the lads will vouch for. A big future there, definitely.
Absolutely. And 30 seconds on the woman that has a big future every year, Finola McCormack. She's going for her fifth Olympics.
She was just unreal. A 5-month-old baby, her third daughter. And as we all know, just ran, got the qualifying time the weekend before in Valencia Marathon for the Olympics in Paris. So she had a very, very quick turnaround. She came out a day after us, and she actually flew home with her husband, Alan McCormack, who's her coach as well, and the baby last night. The baby was tiny. The baby was in the bus with us. The baby was out in the course with us. The baby was in the changing room. The baby was there over the line when she came, and she literally was on her hip all the time. I mean, she's an incredible role model. I mean, this girl is just unbelievable. She was getting faster as the race, I think, just went out of ground, and she was eating up the ground. She got just stood what she was going to do, but I think just that gap between the first three and her was just a little bit too big. I think just the week that was in it, she loved the conditions.
Fair play. Listen, Niamh, I have to leave you go because we're eating up ground as well. Thanks to Niamh, Shane and Oisin. We'll take the break in the news.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
Now joining us on the line is Michael Healy. Michael, of course, you'll remember from a couple of weeks ago we were chatting about the East Kerry Championship, and they had loads of teams available and playing at the time. Michael, you're down to just two now.
Yeah, there's just two teams left. We've had another round of quarter-finals since we last spoke, and the semi-finals last weekend.
Any surprise with the two teams that are in the final, Crokes and Legion?
I'll told probably not. No, I think that this book. The both has done what they've had to do to get this far, and they're deserved to be in the final.
Yeah. Crokes had a big win over Spa. Was that seen? Was that a bit surprised, maybe?
Maybe people would have thought the game would have been closer. They had a very tight final 2 years ago. Crokes won comfortably the match last year, but the last day again, just the experience that the Crokes team have and the ability to get goals at crucial stages, Tony Brust and Kieran O'Leary and Micheál Burns getting crucial goals from, and that took them away from Spa in the end.
Absolutely, and Spa exit. The other game, Legion and Kilcommon, a flick of the coin probably between them. Legion coming out on top. I'd imagine that's a good win for Legion.
Well, it is, yeah. They had posted the week before, and they managed to get through that with Finbar Murphy is outstanding on the day, and yesterday as well, or Saturday, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. Yesterday it was Sunday, a bad day as we know, but they did what they had to do, got the points they needed to win the match, and that's all you can do in any given day.
Yeah, absolutely, and they're in the final now, and of course there was that link with the old Kerry management team, of course, between Legion and Kilcommon, both of them being on it. Kilcommon, of course, beat Rathmore in the game before as well. So we have Crokes and Legion to look forward to. Crokes defending another title. Would I say that Crokes are possibly favourites?
You'd have to say yes, they would be favourites. They've gone for three in a row now, although the last time they did play in the finals with Legion, they came out on top impressively of the day. So Legion will fancy their chances, but Crokes you'd expect would be favourites, yes, to get a third win in a row.
Yeah. The Crokes team, I mean, I read something today that some of them are going for an incredible 12, 13, maybe even 14 O'Donoghue Cup titles. So there's an awful lot of experience there.
There is, yeah. I think Kieran Leary is going for his 13th title, I think, which mm-hmm. is an amazing amount. And there's a lot of others as well. They could be going for 10, 9, 10, 11. So the experience is the thing they have. They know what to do in the big games when it's tight and when you need to get the scores and when you need to defend and keep the ball. They know what to do at the right time, and that's why they're so successful.
Yeah, and of course Peter Kane will have Legion well prepped heading into that final as well.
Oh, he will, yes. This will be big for them now, because they probably thought they would do better in the intermediate championship than they did in the end. So this is their big chance to win some silver bells for them this year, yes.
Mm-hmm. And where is the final? What time and venue and date?
At 2 p.m. on Sunday at Fitzgerald Stadium.
Fair play. And will he have the dreaded penalties like everybody else at the very end as well if needed?
Oh yeah, it's got to be one on the day. There's no coming back. It's Christmas Eve or anything like that. It's got to be decided Sunday, yes. Yeah.
So the whole of Clare will be taking penalties in their back gardens now for fear they're called upon if it goes to extra time and thing. Well, listen, Michael, thanks very much with it, and the very best to look to the East Kerry contingent getting to the end. And of course, as I said, the Mid-Kerry Championship is on as well at the weekend. Kiel, of course, who are back in the final after a number of years, taking on Lown Rangers, and be interesting to see how that one goes as well. We'll take a break.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
It's 76 minutes gone here in Croke Park. Wherever you are, listen throughout the world. This kick could decide whether Kerry are in an All-Ireland final or
look,
not in normal time.
Hill 16 is erupting.
Oh, Hill 16. It's blue. They're shouting. There's foghorns. There's every sort of thing up there.
The Dublin, what Johnny
O'Shea. Can Johnny quieten the hill? It's hard to quieten the hill, City. Now, Johnny O'Shea, steady himself on the run up, strikes the ball, hits it with all his heart. Where does it go? It's over! It's over! It's over! The game's over! Kerry are in an All Ireland final!
It's over! It's over!
Tim Moynihan, do you ever get tired of listening to that?
No, for the good of Kerry, I suppose. I love listening to it back, but I suppose it was a unique moment.
Where does it come from? Where does that emotion come from in that moment? I mean, obviously you're a fan and a commentator, and you're putting it both together. But I mean,
yeah, it was like somebody said, an out of body experience. It's just that in that particular moment, I think it was Liam Brosnan and Billy O'Shea to our right and Ambrose, and it just all happened. You say suddenly, say this is down to a kick that will put us into an All Ireland final, and you just go with it. Things come out. I tell you, we had no control. Dawn to say it. And I suppose if you're passionate about it, you go with the flow. And I suppose our commentaries are kind of like that. We go with the game, and we're two ordinary guys that like we're sitting above on the terrace, and we have the emotion, the passion for Kerry, and hopefully that's what that transpired into to do that day anyway.
That's the textbook answer, isn't it?
Yeah, well it is. Yeah, I've that well practiced before I came in here.
Two guys sitting up the stand talking about football. I'd say a lot of people call you that. Come here, congratulations, Regional Sports Broadcaster of the Year. That's why you're on, Tim. It's great to be back in studio. I mean, you were here one time and you were there in the corner.
It was 4 years and you know, it was four very, and you know it yourself, Donald, it takes a time to put on a marker, but the man that came before us, the great Wishy, it was always his programme, and a difficult few months for people to get used to us, but you know, look, I suppose as they say in show business, the show moves on, but what an opportunity, and I enjoyed every moment of it. And I suppose no different to going to football matches on a Sunday. You make a lot of connections, a lot of networking, and it's all worthwhile, Donald.
Yeah, come here, let's go back. You're far too modest. I mean, Regional Sports Broadcaster of the Year. Did that sink in at any stage? I mean, or do you go to the match and it's just a bit of a tag? But I mean, you must go home at night and say, God, that's pretty kind of cool.
Yeah, look, we've been up there, and for, look, it's for the station. It's no different to you having me here tonight. It's a team, and I know, I suppose the old cliche is it's about the people around me, and that's what it is. Like my wife at home, Deirdre, I have two girls, Grace and Kieran. They afford me the time, and they know it's my passion. I live for it. I love Gaelic football. I love Kerry. I'm delighted we're from Kerry, and you know, things like that, it's bonus territory, and it is, you know. I've been up there on a few occasions, and right at the right hand side, you'll see it next year when you're up there, Donald, the right hand side of the stage, you've all these Imro awards, and they're fabulous awards. I used to look and I said, wouldn't it be nice to be walking out the door with one of those? And you know, things like the Seanie O'Shea pint, other things happened during the year. We covered a few ladies games, it went well, and we did this thing, Dear Kerry, you know, your hope for Kerry in the future, and all those things, you know, if you've the right person probably listening to that audio, you'd hope maybe they might have a serious look at it, and you'd be in contention, and we've pulled off a silver and a bronze over a few years. And I do, look, I missed that night above. We were celebrating. It was a great night for Radio Kerry with four goals, and came back with, I suppose, you know, you say it with all the nominations and everything, 11 nominations. It was brilliant. But John Duggan from Off the Ball, I probably both follow him, and he said, Tim, embrace this, because not everyone gets this. And do you know, lately it's kind of sinking in. Do you know, it's nice to have one of those. And you know, it's for, and genuinely, it's for the people of Kerry. I go out to my van, do a league game, I'm going to pick this, maybe go back to your side of the country. And it's people like that that make it. You're there on a wet Sunday, maybe all you have is the few supporters from either side, the management and the players, and it's the players that make it, the fellas inside them. They're entertaining us, and we're trying to give the link to the people, and I suppose that's what makes it. And that's without being, and we are modest, I suppose, but there's a reality check as well, that you know, it's all about your next play, and yeah, hopefully,
and of course there is that aspect of it. I mean, you are still doing what people done 60 years ago on Radio 1. You're bringing that game down in South Kerry to the people who aren't at it, and it hasn't changed. I mean, it's still descriptive, it's still important, it's still factual. You're still recreating that situation so somebody else can understand it and probably tell somebody else what happened the next day. So are you conscious of that when you take the microphone, that, you know, everything that you see, you need to project it so somebody that you don't know at all can see it?
Yeah, I suppose you're painting the picture as if you were listening at home yourself, and you're not trying to fabricate. And the great Mihalo Murihurtig said to me once, he said, Tim, just talk about what's there, don't talk about things that are not happening. And that, you know, at 8 years of age, I was reared by my grandparents, and I remember the 1975 All-Ireland Kerry against Dublin. What was the scoreline, Don? Was it?
I wasn't
2-12,
born.
2-12, you weren't born, 2-12 to 11 points. But that team, and I always remember, you know, that was Kerry, the start of the golden years, you could say, like, the, you know, and I remember that. I probably remember the team, you know, Paddy O'Mahony in goals, your full back line was at Joe O'Keefe, Jono the Prince, and Jimmy Dean, and now Kerry man in the other corner, and half back line, Paddy O'Shea, the horses, he was affectionately known, Tim Kennedy, and on the other wing was Jor Power, converted later. And then in the middle of the field, you have Paddy Lynch, Beaufort, and I'll always think he was one, he's the only Kerry player that played in 15 positions for Kerry, and that beat challenge games they used to play in out in America that time of the trip, and with the great man from Churchill was Pat McCarthy, and who'd a half forward line. And all I'm saying is that at 8 years of age, that's what it brought to me. You had wing forward the great Brendan Lynch, great left leg the Doctor, and on the 40 Ogie there for a number of years in All Ireland Fine, and the other wing you had a man that went off into that day was the great Mickey Ned, and a full forward line. Look at the full forward line.
You say he went off as if
Yeah, I know. Well, he was clotheslined. It was a tackle. There was a number of, yeah. But, you know, that full forward line, John Egan, Mikey Sheehy, and Pat Spillane. And, you know, you remember those. There was two goals in that game. Gerard Driscoll came on and he scored a goal. But that, I suppose, that embedded in the passion. That was genuinely 8 years of age. And my auntie-in-law at some stage was, I went out, and I can remember and that's a nice few years ago, Donald. I went out to the gable of the grandparents' house that, and I was kicking the ball up, catching it come down, and I thought I was fielding balls in the middle of the park with Paddy Lynch or Pat McCarthy and scoring them like Sheehy or Spillane. And that's what embedded, and that's pure genuine when I say that. And they were lovely and, you know, youthful years. You're only 8 years of age, and then what, two or three years after, you were starting a four in a row, 78 to 81, and it's instilled in you. And I used to come in here to, I think it was the PM PA office at the time, with my grandparents, and Mikey Sheehy was inside the counter, and my eyes, the stars inside the counter.
Hello, sure.
And my, yeah, exactly. And that's genuine. I think it's with every, no different to a young fella now with, yeah, David Clifford. I met somebody recently, met David Clifford up in Smith's, and his mom was talking to me, and she said, this young fella, he was only 10 years of age, went down the aisle, and he saw David, and he came back, Mom, David Clifford is, and she is down the aisle, and did you get his autograph? No, he's with his family, Mom, we can't be bought. So all I'm saying, I suppose we were in awe of those fellas, and no different to the youth of today.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, that's a beautiful picture that you paint, but it's not a picture unique to you. I mean, because when you were going out hitting your wall, the neighbour down the road who was 8 or 9 was doing exactly the same, and the fella back in Dingle was doing it, and the fella down in Carstavine were doing it. Is that what makes us very unique in Kerry? Because we're inbred into that kind of, and like you said, I mean, you won 75, you can remember, well, maybe 76 was tough and 77 was awful maybe, but then you went on the four in a row and you went with that journey, and you get to a stage where you kind of expect it forever, but it did stop for us, didn't it?
Yeah, and it did, and you know, there's some bleak periods, but you know, that same thing, I met somebody recently who was at a Christmas party working with David Clifford's dad, and David Clifford and Paddy were in the back of the car the following day, and I think Dermot Clifford picked up this man on his way to wherever they were going, be it Killarney, and David Clifford, I know he was, I don't know if was he 7 or 8 years at the time, and I suppose Dermot Clifford said to the man beside him, he said, can you name the team that played Monaghan last Sunday? It was a National League game. Not alone did he name the whole team, David, from 1 to 15, he told who scored, who got man of the match, so that was embedded in him at 7 or 8 years of age. Mm-hmm. And that'd tell you the interest. He wasn't just somebody appeared, he knows the history of Gaelic football in Kerry, and that's what keeps, no different to what you do there, that's what keeps us going, and it's life. You, every day I'm talking to somebody about Gaelic football, maybe because of what I do for the radio and my love of it, but there's at times you need a small bit of a break from it, but it's very hard to get away from it, and it's because it's in us, it's part of us, it's our life, it's our makeup, it's our DNA, that won't change.
Yeah. You spoke to us before, Tim, about how you fell into the gig, I suppose, in many senses, and you were looking over the wall and you were saying, God, I do an old job there for you, if you can. Talk to us about your early days, talk about your first gig. Can you remember your first actual gig? I remember Tim Minahan years ago when we were in the press box, you were kind of the runner in a sense, that you'd be running down, you'd be finding out for Wishy who was the sub and who wasn't the sub, and I remember you in that gig.
Absolutely, that was probably my first gig. My first gig was with the great Gary O'Sullivan, and I suppose Kerry are fortunate, the people of Kerry fortunate, that, you know, going back to Sean Barry's time, and of course the great Liam Higgins, and obviously the great Wishy Fogarty, and you know, down along the line, Gary O'Sullivan, Gerry O'Connor was there, and we were always had somebody to cover. But my earliest gig, I suppose, was with Gary O'Sullivan, and Gary said, who's this fella sitting beside me today? And it kind of worked. And then nobody else was able to do a second game, and I was popped in as well. But you know, we had a great, we had some bad years. I was with Gerry O'Connor, so many losing quarter finals, semi finals, finals, and then 2014 we won the minors. But I suppose my earliest gig, and you're dead right, right that Wishy and Liam, and what a grounding to have. Mm. You two legends above in the press box. And what I was allowed to do that time was go down on the sideline. Any movement of sub, I'd send the information live up to Liam Higgins and Wishy. But I suppose what was happening in the finish, I knew the move before probably the management, and we were giving it to the radio, and the radio was able to tell it. But I'll always remember above in Cork for a National League game, and it was under lights, Kerry against Cork, and Paddy Russell was doing the line. And the next thing, during the game, anyway, whatever way the game was going, Wishy, in full flight, the game was on, he said, "Tim, will you ask Paddy there," he says, "will you come on Terrace Talk tomorrow night?" No, this is during the game. Paddy, and apparently it was at, do you know that that Dublin game where it was a Dublin Tyrone, they went to war, it was a Paddy Ross,
right,
Paddy, yeah. And he wanted to get Paddy, yeah, he was always, Wishy was always on the ball with those things. He said, "Will you get him for Terrace Talk?" And I said, "Okay, Wishy, I'll get him at half time." But he wanted his answer there and then. So I said, great characters. And I was up in, it was mentioned earlier tonight in your programme, of Finug winning, you know, the junior. But I remember above we played Finug representing Kerry, played a team from Tyrone, and it was above in Portlaoise, and for some reason Wishy couldn't go there that day, and I was with Liam Higgins. And I always remember it, talk about being put in the hot seat. Liam was commentating, I was co-commentating, and the next thing, and this was one of the early days, and he said, "Tim, entertain the people at Kerry there whilst I go down and get interviews." Right. And I said, I don't know, I winged it somewhere, but all I'm saying is you get the respect of those guys then when you move along. And yes, and if you, I know you'll probably ask us, you know, highlights of commentary, but I always remember, and I think I mentioned it before in some programme, that we were above, John Heffernan was doing the sound for Radio Kerry on sound that day, and we went all the way to Tyrone, and Kerry needed a draw from that particular game, and for some reason Gary O'Sullivan couldn't go, and he asked me the night before, would I go, and we collected Wishy or whatever, and we went off, or maybe it was a Saturday, and we went off and we did the game. And I always remember coming out after that game, and I was nervous as hell, because this was my first time kind of doing a senior game, and Wishy always, when he sat into the car, took off the shoes, and sometimes he put the legs up on the dash, and he turned around, he'd his seatbelt on, he said, before we took off, he said, "You have arrived today, Tim." And I said, I'll always carry it with me, and it meant a lot coming from Wishy, because Wishy had done games with a lot of guys, and fierce connection, like even we go to games, he go with Liam, they were such great friends, absolutely brilliant friends. And Wishy was a small bit lost when he lost, you know, Wishy, and then he worked his way in. Gary O'Sullivan got his respect and respected each other. So, and you know, it was a lovely place to be in, and you remember those things. They were kind of the highlights, you know.
Yeah. And after a while, I suppose you become a kind of a mafia in a sense, because the longer you're at it, kind of more people will know you at the various venues, and they know Tim and all that.
Yeah.
But you have a new partner.
Yeah.
Where did
and
he come
I
from?
I tell you, my God, isn't he some partner? Look, you know, the one thing, we were at the game yesterday, like, and, you know, he's, first of all, he's this Slieve Lucre, a lovely accent inside. It's loads of culture, tradition coming from Guinea. Plus, he's a legend, 1984 captain. Did you know that Ambrose was a minor for 4 years? He was a minor. He was a big 15-year-old. He's a big man now, but I'd say he was just as big when he was like at 15, 16, 17, 18. Amazing. I think one of the Kings from Stranraer as well holds that record. But what he is, he's Kerry. He takes pride in working for the station because it's Kerry. And, you know, I suppose we have a bit...
He's still wearing that Kerry jersey.
Oh, not 100%. And Eamon Hickson, our former producer of Terrace Talk, you know, he did something for one of his exams, and he studied us in commentary. Oh, what a study.
Oh, my God.
That was scary. I said he'd leave his studies after it. But he saw, you know, he was... Everything with Ambrose, the amount of times he says the word "we,"
okay,
as in Kerry. So that endears itself into the Kerry. I try to be neutral. I could say "they" at times, just in case there's somebody from Cork listening, but you know, he was trying to get that balance. But you'll always get, and he's passionate, he's a poetic license. He can, like, Ambrose can say things that I can't say because he endears himself to the nation, you know. And his one-liners, they're on record, they're on video. So he's a passionate Kerry man. And I suppose what it is as well, that you do games with guys that maybe you're not, I won't say friendly is not the word, they could be more of acquaintance, you wouldn't spend a lot of time. But I suppose what's helps our journey is, and I'd hope it would, is that we travel together. I pick him up. I'm from Spoilrotten. I pick him up in Killarney and taking him to games and bringing him back.
Sure, he's injured now at the moment.
Sure, he's injured. Yeah, sure. He can't press the accelerator and the brake. But what it is we get to know each other. You know, we know where we can go each other. Ambrose is the same talking in the car as he's doing the commentary.
Is that what makes it? There's a line there between you that's invisible in a sense that you know how far you can push this.
Yeah,
and push it maybe a little bit further some other days, but that's as far as I go, and I know what my role is, Tim knows what his role is, and we work together as that beautiful team.
Yeah, and even as late as yesterday in that game, but you know, unfortunate for poor old Dingle going out of it, I was debating, I said that's a soft free. And I argued a couple of months back, it's either a free or it's not.
Yeah.
And there he pulled me in it yesterday. Yeah. So he knows, and I know, we know where we can go with you. We share a room.
Yeah.
He loves Westerns. You could have a Western on TG Cahir at 4 o'clock in the morning. And Tim trying to sleep. And, you know, and that's the connection there. But he endears himself to so many. And like, he, as late as yesterday, there was somebody from the Sydney Opera House listening to the car on Saturday when the Stole Emmets were playing. He reckons he's very big in Greece, he's very big in Krakow, Warsaw. So look, the public love him, and
we'll have to sort that one out, because I don't think he's too big in Rathmore, which is down the road, and he certainly wouldn't say we when he talks about him. I'm nearly sure. We'll take a quick commercial break.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
Now you're very welcome back to Terrace Talk. Donal Barry sitting in the chair that used to be Tim Moynihan's chair, which was amazing. Is it strange sitting over there, is it?
No, do you know what? There's less pressure. You know, and don't you know that about radio, that you know you have to keep people engaged? And I know out there tonight throughout our county, the rural part of our county, and likewise the towns and satellite towns, that there's some people living on their own, and radio, whether from 7:30 in the morning to 11 o'clock at night, even though sometimes they might be listening, that's their company, and I'd be well aware of that. And you try to be balanced, to have a bit of fun. I'd be very opinionated, as you well know, Donal, and people. Do you know what? And you know it as well as I do. Try to be honest, as in, I won't say try, be honest and be yourself and don't try to be anyone else. And that's what I try to do.
Yeah. We're on somebody's kitchen in here, Tim. And maybe a couch.
I'm sure.
And maybe a couch somewhere.
Or maybe turned off somewhere else. But the ones that are still listening, hopefully we keep them engaged.
Stay listening to 8 o'clock in here if you're still listening. Come here, Tim. A great year for collecting awards. The Kerry Association Award in Dublin. That was a very special one for yourself and Ambrose.
Yeah, and totally came out of the blue as well. And it all goes back again, Dawn. That was a very tough time, the pandemic. And, you know, we were out in a lot of places, you and I, at times where there was no. And I've met you there, you know, at games where there was no supporters allowed in, and we were, you know, we were a lot of us, a lot of people out there relied no different to you know, the medium of radio and being a person's friend. And then I suppose GA Go over the last couple of years, and I suppose from my own age group up, you know, a lot of people are not into technology. It seems everything is made more difficult nowadays. We're talking about, you know, cashless gates and what have you. So people relied on us, and I suppose the big game for us, I think it wasn't on it wasn't on free to air. It was Kerry versus Tyrone. So a lot of people listening, and the you know, the diaspora as well, and that appeared
over in Spain listening.
Yeah, absolutely. And I paid a lovely request for you and your family that, but. What it was that a lot of people relied, and I think it you know, it struck a chord with a lot of people, and it probably gave us extra listeners as well, that, you know, some people, yeah, I'd be watching television and maybe radio, and if you're painting a good picture, and if you're making it you know, exciting, hopefully it is exciting, and we can, I suppose the big thing, Donald, when we go outside of Kerry, we can be a bit of bias. Now we'll call it, and you know that Ambrose, if he's not happy with management of Kerry, happy, he will call it, but you know, people see that, but we go after things. Refs around the country are running for cover. I suppose people, it's as if that you try to bring the game inside to a person in a car, a person in a sitting room or a kitchen, and to paint that picture. And I'll always remember years ago, I was up in, not too many years ago, when Brosna won the junior championship. That day I was sent to Ballinasloe. That was the semi final, the John Mitchell's in the final. And I was inside in a box, and it was pouring rain, just like yesterday. It was windswept, and I was trying to wipe the condensation off the window, and I was doing the commentary on a phone, and I always remember that Kieran O'Regan was back in the desk at the time, famous referee now, of course, and Kieran said that there's a woman after phone in, he said, mine in, she's after blaming you, she burnt her dinner, because I suppose whatever way the game was very close and we were trying to bring the picture, and I hope that woman has forgiven us. But the point I'm making that, you know, people want that, and they like radio, and the ward in Dublin from the Dublin Association, we are honoured, and it was lovely to hold the cup. He was able to hold the Sam Maguire in 84 and his own, and it was nice to hold the cup with Ambrose, and I know what he means to the people of Kerry, and to share that award, it genuinely, it meant a lot. Yeah. And it was from the people of Kerry as well.
Yeah, and it extends that Kerry community. That's the Kerry community in Dublin. There's a Kerry community in London. There's a Kerry community in New York. And I suppose that's something that you're hugely conscious of, the fact too, that when you are doing Radio Kerry, I remember years and years ago, not that long ago, Ambrose saying, it's not radio neutral, Donal, it's Radio Kerry, he says.
Yeah,
that's what you are. You're selling that message to that diaspora, yeah, firstly, who are listening to you. Come here, a lot of fun along the way. Talk us about the spilt water moment, will you, please?
Because yeah, I suppose.
Liam Brosson never worked as hard.
No different than cameras being here tonight, Donal. Cameras are everywhere now.
No water here tonight.
There's no water to be spilled. I said, it's very funny with that, and I suppose it went viral. I see different newspapers covered it. It went national, and I suppose one thing, I suppose, it gets you out there, probably embarrass your family in the meantime. I was there and I was trying to keep the commentary going. Ambrose totally ignored me, and you know, the water spilt in the equipment, and you have to be very, that was 4,000 or 5,000 worth of equipment on top of our desk.
40,000 or 50,000.
But I said, the worst part of it, Don, you know, this is a game, carrier in it, there's people listening to us, and I want to destroy the commentary. So there was Liam Brosnan, then gave me some bit of a jacket or something. I was trying to blow the water off it, not into it. And but to make a long story short, anyway, it got rave reviews for some, and they liked, I suppose, the honesty of us. And Amrys was totally oblivious to anything happening. But what we did, I said, Finn Dave here on social media, we went back and we tracked back to see who brought the water there.
Oh, no way.
It was one man from Guinea Gwilla that placed it there in the first place. I was blamed for spilling it.
Sure, it was water.
It was water, yeah. My Waddy Orange. But I said, I got the blame, but I think Ambrose O'Donovan is as guilty as I am, so see.
Oh my God, yeah. And he didn't lift one finger to help you.
He didn't, he totally oblivious, he didn't even know what happened, but it made him famous again, yeah. Once again.
He does, of course, get stuck in people the odd time, and I mean, of course, there is that one famous or infamous incident above in Tyrone. There's probably loads of infamous incidents.
God, yeah.
But we have a little bit of it here, and we might just play that and give the listener a quick view. Of course, to set it up, you're above in Oma. Things aren't going well for Kerry, you might be a bit low at some of the supporters or maybe the players, and it wasn't really liked by some people.
There's a Tyrone man here, he's helping me with the commentary. He said there was an off the ball. There was Ambrose never did. The Tyrone player, for our listeners now, we're surrounded by
bullied. I think I'm being bullied up here in Tyrone.
We're surrounded by Tyrone people and Kerry people, but they absolutely love us up here. And they have
speak for yourself, yeah. My lovely boy.
Well, I think they I know they love us.
The BM is back on here again.
The play is
well.
Yeah, they're at it again, Ambrose. That was a free out, Ambrose, to cut for over carrying. It's a free out for Tyrone. Ambrose, we have to be very careful what we say.
We don't have to be careful at all.
We have to be very careful what we say, Ambrose, up here, because they're coming in.
Careful,
like us.
Careful is one thing we won't be.
Well,
up
I suppose
here.
It's not in our DNA. Tyrone 1-13, Kerry 2-9. The Tyrone players and the supporters right around us.
Somebody want to tell him it's the league, man. There's a big man here with a cap on, he better sit down.
Yeah,
because I'm getting smart, sick, yeah. And he's in my face now too much,
yeah,
entirely.
Yeah, he's rubbing it in.
I'll have to take off the microphone,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, well, Ambrose, you might stay with us for
a
while.
So if I'm missing for a couple of minutes, you'll know how I am.
I have your back anyway, Ambrose.
Now, you'll have to say this is a good learning curve for Kerry. They answer the question to us.
They're getting excited there beside you, Ambrose, roaring into your ear.
He could be swallowing a microphone here in a minute.
He could have a story here, Ambrose. Tyrone,
no, you'd have
Tyrone
said they were well worth their win. Yeah, well worth their win.
There you go, Tyrone. Well,
yeah, I just.
Thank God you didn't lose the microphone anyway.
No,
come here to me. Is that rare, or is that banter, or is that kind of banter that boils over to something else?
Yeah, it's kind of a dangerous scenario actually, because when we went up there, we were early, we're on time, but there's so many controls up there from the control tower, and only a certain amount of people can stay in the one part of the press area, and then we were moved across the way right into the heart of Tyrone. There was all Tyrone jerseys around us, and anything we'd say, you know, you'd be kind of done the bias where they'd pull you and they'd be turning around, they'd put the fist up, some of them, not all supporters, and a woman even threatened me, she had an umbrella, you know, and say, and there, but Amherst, this fella was beside Amherst, and anytime Amherst would make a comment during the analysis, your man was in Amherst's ear, and I thought I think that sums it up in the end, that Amherst told your man he could be swallowing a microphone, and you know, it was real, but it wasn't the perfect scenario, but I tell you, Amherst, there was probably 3,000 Tyrone supporters sitting around, but I tell you, the man from Guinea Aguilla didn't stand back from him, and the small little fella from Knocknagoshal as well was with him, so I suppose there'd be a bit of temper in both fellas anyway for a start, but one thing we won't be is careful here, Tim, but I tell you, we made our way quite swiftly back to the car after we got out.
I imagine you did, and thank God Tyrone won, otherwise they'd go after you. That's good banter, and it's fun, and you see it. You obviously roll out week after week. I mean, they're the National League games, you have the big championship games, but you also tell the story of club games and district board games and the whole lot. That's quite part of it too, isn't it?
Oh yeah, yeah. Like, we wouldn't have Kerry football without clubs, and that's my biggest fear going forward, that we're losing connection. I said it, you know, one night here in Terrace Talk, we had a man from another court, David Corcoran. He was on about, you know, how, I suppose, how they've dropped the level in clubs, in Munster rugby clubs. He said, purely because it's become Club Munster. Mm-hmm. And I just fear that the way the game is going, I know you'll probably ask me this question later on, that, you know, you don't want a total separation between the county senior team and clubs, because you would absolutely have nothing but for clubs. That's where every young fella from 5 or 6 years of age starts his football, and we have to be very careful, because the game is pushing to, I suppose, that semi-professional side, being honest, with the training.
We can't say it's professional, but I mean, in comparison to it was 15 years ago.
Oh yeah, it's at a different level. You know, you see what the senior players, what's needed, and it's very difficult. You either become a Kerry player or a club player. I know there's we could be here for hours talking about how condensed seasons and everything, but we don't want a gap to develop, and you know, the GAA have to have a serious look.
Is that why the split season kind of came in? Because that gap was developing, at least with the split season.
Yeah.
Everybody has their pros and cons about it. It at least designates this for this and
time,
that for that,
and
it mightn't be the best solution, but it is a starting solution.
And what we don't want is you know, guys inside the Kerry team, that, and every Kerry player want to play with the club. We know that, but you know, everyone wants to win. Yeah. Be it the manager of the Kerry team.
Foley yesterday,
Robert correct. Bunyan. A prime example.
Ran 60 yards up.
Prime
the field,
example. And that's what you need when your county player comes back.
Played a great ball in Bengal.
Yes, yeah. And if you ask anyone, the senior players don't. I know we're probably going off on another tangent. You know, they love the idea of finishing in July, that they have a bit of a life, that, you know, there's a serious, serious commitment now if you're a player, but they love to go back to their clubs, but it's maybe not as pressurised, that scenario. Then you have a club struggling because they don't have them during the county league. You want to keep your league status, and suddenly you're missing their players, and players have, and a club here in Tralee has suffered because of it, having players in with Kerry that may not make, you know, that first 15 or that panel, Austin Stacks. And that's being brutally honest. I'm not saying it's the reason that they're down playing intermediate, but clubs do suffer around the county if you have players in, and you know, it's fine if they make the grade, but you know, I'm sure that there's probably what 40 players inside that trying to get on that 26. Well, look, that's for another day, but we have to be careful, that mind those clubs, because we have problems in rural areas with numbers, and you don't want to lose our clubs in Kerry.
Yeah, absolutely, we don't want to lose our listeners or sponsors either.
Yeah, correct.
So we have to go quick break.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
Now I'm joined by Tim Mighton, the regional sports broadcaster of the year. Doesn't get any older, any better, to keep saying it and saying it and saying it. It's great to say it. Tim, of course, they're the highlights of the year. You've had another difficult journey along the way.
Yeah, I don't, you know, a lot of people know it out there. Look, I touched on it one night I was on with you going back, I suppose, when we were nominated for the one. Yeah, look, I have prostate cancer, and I've no denying it, and I know some people know it out there, and I suppose it's not me saying it to get pity, but it's me saying it for, you know, when I was in my 40s, I didn't do a lot of visiting to the doctor, you know, and I suppose a wake up call, and just kind of coming after we beat Galway in that All-Ireland final 2 days later, I kind of got news that it wasn't the end of the world, but it wasn't news that I wanted either, you know. And
what was that moment like when you got that news? I mean, obviously you have a busy life, you're worried about who Jack Conor's putting on the team or not, and you're getting the thing in, and then this comes.
Yeah, look, it rocks your world, don't you know? And I suppose, you know, you know, I was always a kind of a happy-go-lucky fella. Then again, I suppose things change when you hit that that Craiga, that you know, that 50 years, and you know, you should do checks on you. But it did. It rocked my world. You think about mortality. You think about everything. You in the job I do on a daily basis, I'm on my own. You know, quite a bit. You know, it pressure. You think about family. You think about things you've done. You might be even thinking about some people earlier. You might be even thinking about your will, and that you know, you go through all those things, and I suppose you'd have to go through it to experience what it can be, and it can be hard hitting, but you have to be strong. People around you, I'm very fortunate. I've a great wife and two brilliant girls as well. And look, it's I was up. I had biopsies a couple of weeks ago, and thanks be to God, that you know, the levels are the same. But I'm up again, you know, the week after Christmas. But so many people that have experienced it, I've been speaking to them, you listen to them, and when you're, you know, amazing work done in all the hospitals around Munster and throughout Ireland, and great people, and you're kind of, your faith is in their hands as well. And the good thing about it, there's control of it at the minute, Donal. And do you know what it does? It makes you, even like nights like tonight, you don't take for granted. I'm delighted to be here, and I suppose I was always somebody, maybe, you know, in the past I'd have regrets maybe for things. Did I do this right? Did I do that right? And you're looking at the future, but you can't control anything. You can control the controllables. And the one thing I've learned, Donald, from all this is that we got to stay in the present. You know, life is very fragile. You know, things happen, families are turned upside down, you could, you know, go outside the door and something could happen, but we can't think like that either, or we, you know, we'd be all hermits. And what it does is that I really appreciate, and I think that's actually the biggest thing that's come out of it, Donal, that I appreciate everything I have. And I remember my late grandmother saying to me, you know, be appreciative of what you have, because you could have a lot less. And you know, those little things, those one liners, the old older people were brilliant. They wouldn't say much, but what they said, it always sank in, and that was one of them. But I really appreciate everything I have, and I always did. I hoped I did, but I think it embeds in it me now. No different to being here tonight. No different to the job I do for the HSE Radio Kerry. I'm just delighted to be able to do that, and I suppose have belief. And you know, there's an old saying, I suppose. It's great when somebody does something for you, but you're a lot happier when you do something for somebody else. And I try to live to that mantra, and I hope I'm doing the right thing, basically.
Absolutely. Obviously, look, we wish you the best. I don't know what even to say the right words. Yeah. There's a fingers crossed that you pray for.
Yeah.
But I mean, obviously, the more people that you will talk to about it, they will have their own stories. And it's a unique enough club, I'd imagine, in the sense that you will meet somebody who's travelling that road with you for that length of time.
Yeah,
and you've probably met a couple along the way as well, and you get share stories.
100%. When you're up in the Orchid Clinic above in Cork, and you see people, you know, sitting beside you, and they all have their different journeys. And I think that's the whole point. And, you know, I see a lot of people out there have known it, I suppose. Information just seeps through, and you know, I'd have told a lot of close friends and that, but the thing is, I think it helps that other people, even for things that's ahead of you, they speak to you. And the best, you know, you have to make a decision at some stage. It is life changing, 100%, but it just makes you appreciate, and that's the one thing. You could have all the wealth, not that I'm definitely not wealthy anyway,
that's Ambrose's
but you know, you could have all the wealth in the world, but health is, and you can control some of it, you can do the right things, but at the end of the day, you know, our faith is in somebody else's hands. And like I say, it shall shock your world, but you know, you overthink things. You always think the worst at the start, but a few grey hairs have appeared here and there, and I'm like, I'm not like Ambrose putting a colour in my hair and things like that.
Is there truth in that?
He denied it, but I can't understand how it's the same colour with the last 61 years.
A man who had no stress whatsoever. Maybe come here, let's put you under a bit of stress. We'll finish up and we'll wrap up a quick fire round questions, and we'll put the counter on, the timer on you. I asked a number of people this week, give me a few questions for Tim Moynihan, and geez, if I don't read half them out, they'll know which ones are in hell. But very quickly, quick fire round, most memorable highlight as a commentator?
Yeah, as I mentioned a couple of them there, that, you know, with Weishi and what have you, but I suppose it'll be between two. You're going from one level to another. Seanie O'Shea's point will probably, I'll carry it, not because I did the commentary, but the whole, you know, the weight in his shoulders. He was coolness personified, a serious footballer. I followed him from minor level, and I suppose I said something during that, you know, free, that from what, 55, 60 metres out, that he hits it with all his heart. And it just came out, I saying that. It resonated with a lot of people, and I take pride in saying that, but I didn't mean to say that. It just came out, and I would, probably it is the highlight so far, but there's lots of highlights there, Donald.
Well, if you don't hurry up, talks us won't have an hour for the show, and we'll never get through the next 14 questions. So, best club pitch you were at this year?
Best club pitch.
This year, so it'll save you from insult.
This year. Yeah. Desmos versus Fossa, it was a carnival atmosphere. Jordy Murphy and all those guys were out there. Amazing day at the club.
Best county ground you were at this year?
Best county grounds.
It has to be Tyrone, surely, with that atmosphere.
Yeah, I'd say for challenging, it has to be Tyrone. But, you know, I've been in Páirc Uí Chaoimh. We need a state-of-the-art stadium here in Kerry. Ossinstack's, for a night game, has no equals.
Jesus, that's why you haven't been on the show in years, because you don't answer any question. Favourite footballer as a youngster?
Favourite there was many, but the one that stands out, he's a South Kerry man from Sneem, the great John Egan.
John Egan, absolutely. TV or radio?
Radio. TV paints the picture with the visual. Radio, you have to paint the picture.
If for one day Jack O'Connor said, go away there, Tim, and pick a jersey and I'll play you, what number?
Number 13, I'd put David Clifford at 14, tap it down, game over, ball to Moynihan, over the bar, in the net.
Put in the hand. Which Moynihan would you want, ball to Moynihan? best place to stop with Ambrose on the way to Dublin?
Best place, we know every super kink from here to Donegal. We stop just outside Adair in that filling station, and, you know, one place we do stop and we go up north, and he resides there, it's the Fiddlestone in Billeek. You know Billeek Pottery? That's a famous place for Ambrose.
You have the whole of the kingdom going there. Did you ever get locked in or locked out of a ground?
I didn't, but Ambrose did. Ambrose got locked out years ago when there was a presentation being done in Páirc Uí Chaoimh. We were doing a minor game, Gerard O'Connor and I, the same day. He was being presented to the crowd, and he went to the gate and they said, have you a ticket? And he said, I've no ticket. And he said, I'm Ambrose O'Donovan, I'm going out there at halftime, and you have to have a ticket. And he said to the man inside the gate, we can do this the easy way or the hard way.
Or the Ambrose way. Freezing with the cold or burning up with the heat?
Freezing with the cold, because if you have it freezing with the cold, the warrior comes out in you, Donald. And you saw it yesterday, there was warriors everywhere in Limerick, and they were out in North Kerry as well in the North Kerry final. They were back in Croke, or in the game between Croke's and Spa, was it yesterday? Was it Croke's and Spa yesterday?
And not much of a battle, though.
It's the cold. It's the freezing cold I like for, yeah.
Okay.
Anybody can go to the beach.
Down to the last three. If it wasn't a GA commentary, what other commentary would you like to do?
I'd like to I'd stay at the cricket, because there's a lot of tea and I like the drop of tea, even though I'm not supposed to be drinking it in my present form.
I like cricket too, it's a great sport. Yeah. You could commentate for about 18 hours there, like during with sunglasses on and the whole lot. Last two questions. Kerry Today or Terrace Talk?
Whoa. You see, I've great time for both presenters currently on those programmes, for Donald Barry and Jerry O'Sullivan. For me to do it, or which do I like best?
What you like best?
This is one now that I go 50-50 or call a friend. Look, you're two amazing people, two amazing shows. I have an affiliation, of
course.
Will
you answer a question, because the next one's tougher?
I tell you, that one I'm going to pull from it, because Jerry O'Sullivan is great friends with me and Donald Barry is great friends with me.
No way you'll answer,
and I'm not going to lose you as friends.
Talk sauce or Terrace Talk?
Mary Conroy, one of the all-time greats. The dulcet tones, the voice, everything. And I'd say, look, if I was giving you a mark out of 10, I'd give you both 11.
There you go, Mary. That's the best compliment that you'll get from a GAA commentator this side of Christmas anyway. Talk to us. Listen, Tim, fantastic to have you in. Great as always to see you. The very best to look on your other journey, and the very best to look at your 2024 journey. It starts all over again fairly quickly.
Absolutely. The 3rd of January. Hopefully we'll be covering one of the divisional finals next weekend as well. And thank you, and wish all your listeners and our listeners the very best and health and happiness to everyone.
Yeah, we've loads of listeners on Terrace Talk.
I don't doubt that for one moment.
We'll have a lot more now tonight because they'll think Tim Mining's back doing terrorist talk again.
You're doing fine.
Good stuff. Listen, next week, join us as we have our Christmas terrorist talk special show where the footballing panel take on the hurling panel. We'll win that.
We're looking forward to that. Look, I'll go with the footballing. I need Liam Brosnan for driving John Kennedy. He's gone away now. He's more on clubber and everything now. He's famous. He's a famous man. Look, I think I'd say by 2 or 3 points, the football boys will take the hurlers.
There we go. You heard it here first. Listen, thanks to Ivan, thanks to Keane, and stay listening to Mary. She's up next. Even though she's not better than Terrace Talk, she's 11 out of 10 like ourselves, but I still think we're better than Kerry today, both, but surely, are we?
Ah, you're very good.
We'll do it next week again, all over again.